Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Weekly Conservative Talk. I'm just plain Bill, and we're going to see if Tracy Coyle calls in tonight. I know that she's down in Southern California, but I don't know where she is or what she's doing. So let's just kind of start right on in, see where we go from here. I've got a little bit of a gripe tonight. Have you noticed lately all of the regulations that various levels of government are putting on you? Now, I know you probably have, but you know, it goes really deep. Let me give you a for instance. Do you know what your current, what the current year version of your building code is? Now, that's county administered. Well, at least it is here in California. Here's the question I ask myself. Every 3 years, our county updates the building code. So what does that mean? Does that mean houses that were built 4 years ago are going to fall down? What did they do to them? Most of those changes are minor. Most of those changes are technical in nature. Some of them address issues that state legislators have brought up, such as earthquakes and that kind of thing. But you know what? Right here in my county, I have 100-year-old barns that are still standing, still serviceable, and still being used. Now, it seems to me that if folks have got a barn that old, that's still serviceable, still being used, that building code probably doesn't mean a lot, other than it provides something more for unions. Doesn't provide anything to me that I know of. I mean, I'm smart enough to know that, yeah, I got to connect the black wire to the black wire and the white wire to the white wire and the green wire is always ground. I know that, no, I really can't be connecting up my sewer lines to my water pipes. I really do know that if I want that roof to hold up, I really probably need to take a look at the loads that it's going to carry. But beyond that, it's kind of horse-pucky. Now, that's just at the county level. What about the state? Let me tell you what the big deal here in California is about the state. The state has decided that if you get water out of what they call a defined channel, and that could mean a rivulet channel, that could mean an intermittent creek channel. That could mean a flowing creek or a river. But if you get water out of a defined channel, doesn't matter if you're riparian or not, that you must file with the state. And if you don't, guess what? They're going to fine you. And guess what else? They just hired 25 more people, state level, I'm sure they're union workers, to enforce that law statewide. Now, you live in L.A., that probably doesn't concern you a whole lot. I don't know a lot of people in Los Angeles, in the city of Los Angeles, that get their water from groundwater sources. But I'll tell you what, it sure affects us up here in Northern California. It sure affects those people down in kind of southern North California, down around Santa Rosa, along in that area where they've got a lot of vineyards. Yeah, that affects them a lot. And that's just another example of government run amok. And then the state level, then the federal level. Oh, boy. Do you know that they do more than 8,000 regulations a year? I just read that on a website today that was a site that looks at all the regulations that are either proposed, going into effect, or that they're inviting comments on. 8,000 regulations a year, and every one of those takes some part of your freedom away from you. And that is just, that just is not a tolerable situation. Who in the world told these people to interfere in our lives? I didn't. You probably didn't. Here's where the real problem lies. We don't want them interfering in our lives, but we want them interfering in somebody else's life. All of you people that are down on tobacco, what did you do? You said, oh God, this is a horrible, terrible thing, and we got to do something about it. So you started up all of these programs indoctrinating the kids and getting the kids to tell the parents to quit smoking, starting to pass laws saying, nah, you know what, if you're in a car, you got a kid with you, no, you can't smoke. And it's getting to the point now where if you got a kid, you can't even smoke in your own house. Now, I am not here to argue with you that smoking is good for you. Clearly isn't. But as an adult, I have a right to make that decision for myself. As a child, I don't have a right to make that decision for myself. Guess what the government considers us? Considers us children. And then think about this. Everybody almost universally declares, oh, smoking is a really bad thing. Yep, it is. It's a bad thing. I will freely admit it. It's a bad thing. What about your salt intake? New Yorkers, I'm talking to you. Your government wants to ban salt. Now, I know that if you completely ban salt, if you take salt completely out of your diet, you're going to die. You can't live without salt. Now, the governor says, oh, yeah, well, we don't want to take that much salt out. We just want to make sure you don't get it in this. That's no different than the tobacco thing, just a different substance. How about any of the other foods, food additives, anything else that government, other people, are saying, oh, that's bad for you, you shouldn't do that? Who gave them some kind of right to interfere in your life the way they do? And the answer is nobody did. The problem is, some people will call for that kind of regulation. The further problem is this. You have legislators that will listen to them. Gee, I wonder if those people are special interests. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. And then they will propose laws. And generally speaking, they do not pass the first time around. People say, ah, yeah, wait. No, we don't think that's a really great idea. But they keep coming back and back and back and back until finally they get what they were looking for. They wear people down. They say, yeah, well, we already answered that way back the first time we brought this up. We don't have to deal with that anymore. Here's the problem. And we have an excellent example of it today. The Disclose Act. Disclose Act did not pass this, looking for the word and I can't think of it, cloture. 57 senators voted to take away your rights for free speech. Unfortunately for them, it takes 60 to do that. What did Chuckie Schumer out of New York, what is it with New York anyway, for God's sake? Chuckie Schumer out of New York said, that's okay, we'll just keep bringing it back up again and again and again and again until we pass it. Oh, man, how many times do we have to fight that fight? Here's the point of all of that. If you do not get involved in the process, if you do not get involved at the local level and work it all the way up, then you are complicit in this. If you have ever said, well, yeah, no, you got to leave me away, you have to leave me alone, but that guy over there is doing things I don't like, and you know what, there really ought to be a law against that. And people listen to that. You know, when I was a kid, there was a kind of a cartoon strip. Actually, it wasn't a strip, it was a single panel cartoon. And it was titled, They Ought to Make a Law. And it, in one picture and very few words, outlined a situation that everybody would have thought, oh yeah, gosh, that's horrible, they ought to make a law. And they did it with humor. They were funny and all that kind of stuff. But that's one of the problems. We got really used to that. And when I was a kid, we got really used to that. They ought to make a law. You know what? No, they ought to not make a law. It is a frivolous and humorous request, but I think for every law that they pass, they have to undo 10 others. And every one of the laws that they pass has to pass with a supermajority. I mean, this has gotten ridiculous. We have laws governing anything that you can think of. There's somebody on Twitter that does old, outdated, antiquated blue law kinds of things. And oh my God, it's funny. I mean, one state apparently has a law that says you can't give your mule a bath in the bathtub. Now, I don't know how many of you own mules. Not very many, I would suspect, but there could be a couple. I don't know how many of you ever tried to give your mule a bath in the bathtub. But apparently that was a big problem someplace because they passed a law against it. I mean, this is stupid. Why do we think that somehow what somebody else does that doesn't harm us, and yes, this is a libertarian part of me coming out, that doesn't harm us, doesn't cause us to alter our lifestyle, doesn't cause us to spend any money, what is it that we think we're doing? I mean, do we think we're protecting somebody else from themselves? I mean, that's a fallacy. You can't protect somebody from themselves. If somebody's going to harm themselves, they will harm themselves. I don't care what the situation is about that. If they are intent on harming themselves, all the way up to suicide, there is not a damn thing you can do about it. You are much better off saying, you know, I wish you wouldn't. Think you got a lot of things to live for. You know, think about all of the good things that have happened in your life. And Godspeed, friend. And let them go do whatever it is that they think they need to do. Why do you want to get involved in their life? I mean, that's not what this is about. I mean, if it's a close friend of yours, you sit down and you talk to them, sure. But for me here in California, to try and do something about somebody back in Virginia is stupid. Doesn't make any sense. I don't know them. I don't know what their circumstances are. I don't know anything. And yet, I think I'm smart enough to put together a law that's going to help in that situation. The only thing it does is put a law on the books that says somebody can't do something. And the only thing that does is take away another freedom that you have. So, folks, don't do that anymore. Don't call up your legislator and say, you know, there ought to be a law against that. One, there probably already is. You just don't happen to like it. And two, it's probably none of your business. So don't do that anymore. Quit doing that. Quit calling for them to make law. Ask them instead. No, don't ask them. Demand instead that they start repealing some of those laws. I mean, everybody, if you live in California, you know about earthquakes. Everybody knows about earthquakes. We're in California, for God's sake. You know that if you live in an earthquake-prone area, you better build your house pretty damn stout. And you better be looking at whatever the current engineering is that says, you know, maybe flexibility is a little bit better way to go. If you don't tie it down really rigid, there isn't anything there that's going to give way. It'll kind of float on itself. Japan has been living with earthquakes forever. Maybe we ought to look at what they do to say, oh, okay, maybe there's a better way. So here's the point of that. If we live here in California, we know that we get earthquakes, then it isn't up to the state legislators. It isn't up to the county supervisors. It's up to us individually, to take precautions and say, you know, I want to protect my family. I want to make sure that, at the very least, the house, roof, everything else doesn't come crashing down on them while they sleep and we get a big one. I mean, that's just common sense. Apparently, common sense isn't all that common anymore. There have been a number of studies that have been done about human nature, how and why people do things. It seems to me that our liberal brethren, either one, don't read those, or two, don't believe them. However, humans have been around for quite a while. We have kind of a track record that we can look back on. And we can say, you know what? When people do this, they do that. When governments do this, people do that. This isn't rocket science. This is just observational. You can go back to the thinkers whose works have been preserved, the Ciceros, and all of those people. And if you read what they say, they talk about human nature, what people do. Apparently, our government doesn't read it, doesn't believe it, because in our current economic situation, yeah, I jumped tracks here a little bit, but that's fine. Hang in there with me. Apparently, in our current economic environment, the government believes that black is white, up is down, and the road to nirvana lies in more government spending. Now, let me tell you that everything that I have read in history says, you know what? If you give somebody a perverse incentive, they will take it. What's a perverse incentive? If you pay me not to work, I won't work. If you pay me to be on welfare, yep, I'll be on welfare. If you pay me to go fishing, yeah, I'll go fishing. If you pay me not to work. Now, what's the matter with that? Well, here's the matter. Here's what's the matter with that. If the government pays me not to work, they are getting the money that they pay me from somewhere. Where might that be? They are getting that money from the evil corporations, who, by the way, employ people, and from the evil workers. They take their cut off the top, and then they divvy out the rest of the people that are not working, those poor, pitiful people that aren't working. And what do those poor, pitiful people do that aren't working? They continue to not work. I don't know about any place else, right here in my hometown of Hayfork, 1,800 people, little village, we aren't incorporated, no incorporated cities in my county. And the saying around here is, everybody who wants to work is working. And that's true. We had a little 11-year-old kid came around looking to work, willing to weed eat and do all that kind of stuff. Tried him out for about 3 weeks. Probably isn't quite old enough to do the kind of job we're looking for. But that's fine. We said, we're done. We got everything done that we needed to do. Thank you very much. We'll call you next year. I'm figuring at 12, he's probably going to be big enough to maybe do something worthwhile. We paid him by the job, not by the hour. I am sure, absolutely positive, I'm going to jail because I assume that I probably violated the wage hour labor laws. We then hired, I think he's 16, maybe 17, something like that. Nice kid, kind of burly. Actually, you know what? He's got to be better than 16. He's probably 17 or 18 because he was driving a truck. And that means here in California, he's got to be kind of that old. Has his own weed eater. Came up, weed-eated our entire front, back, lane, and driveway. And you say, yeah, well, hell, driveways aren't all that big. Yeah, well, mine's about 800 feet long. My lane that leads down to my house is probably another 400 or 500 feet. Yeah, maybe 300 feet. This is not a small job. Again, we paid him by the hour. What's the point of all that? The point is this. They wanted to work. And they were willing to do what they needed to do to work. Those people who aren't willing to work are perfectly content to suck off the government teat and to say, yeah, well, I'm getting paid not to do this. That's fine. You bet. They have no self-respect. And in my opinion, they don't have any morals. Your mileage may vary. And yes, I recognize that there are people that are out of work that are out of work through absolutely no fault of their own. I understand that. This is probably a bad time to be talking about that because of how horrible the economy is. But the point is this. It doesn't have to be that horrible. It is that horrible because we have perverse incentives by our federal government to perpetuate it. And that's just wrong. It's wrong from a moral standpoint. It's wrong from an incentive standpoint. And it's wrong from an economic standpoint. There is just absolutely no justification for it. Our liberal friends will tell you, well, yes, but you cannot. You cannot simply cast those poor people out that don't have jobs and make them fend for themselves. And I'm saying, yeah, I'm hearing that argument. I understand. But you cannot give them perverse incentives to stay there. And I don't care if they have to flip burgers at McDonald's or mop the floor at Costco or whatever else they have to do. When my wife and I first moved to Trinity County in 1981, between us we had 7 part-time jobs. I wasn't working full-time. I had 4 of those part-time jobs. Merrily had 3 of them. The point is, we needed to do that. We needed to do that to pay our $90 a month rent for our little 2-room, 1-bathroom, actually stall, Quonset hut, and put beans on the table. And we did that. I finally got hooked back up into banking, and there you go. That's kind of the end of that story. But the point is this. You got to be willing to do that. If your perverse incentive says no, I don't need to do that because the government is going to take care of me. Where are you going from there? What are you going to do? I mean, it isn't like you're going to say, well, hell, I guess I have to get a job. What you're going to say is, nah, I'll wait until a job comes to me. I'm making X number of bucks a week or a month or whatever it is, and the government's paying me that, and I can just sit here on the rock in the porch in a rocking chair doing nothing. Maybe I'll work a little under the table. Not a good situation. What other perverse incentives are there? Well, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac are pretty good ones on multiple levels. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac bought mortgages all the way from subprime to A. And then they mixed them all up. And then they sold them. Now, perverse incentive number one. If you're going to tell a bank, you know, it really doesn't matter if you make a good loan or a bad loan, we're going to buy them. Guess what? Bank has got zero incentive to make sure that they don't make bad loans. None at all. Not going to come back to them. They sell them. They're gone. Out of their portfolio, never to see them again. Who's got them? Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. At the time, a quasi-governmental agency. What does that mean? Well, it's not really a governmental agency, but everybody believed that the feds would make good any losses. Perverse incentive number two. Where's the harm to Fannie and Freddie? The government's going to bail them out. What do they care? They don't. So then they throw all of these mortgages into the same damn pot. Oh, boy, here we go. And what do? They sell them to investors. And you say, well, yeah, but they're evil investors, right? No. These are like pension funds, mostly. Other big banks. Not a lot of individual investors bought those. Some did, but not a lot. Most of them were pension funds. I mean, what the hell? That's a long-term relationship. It's a long-term, steady income stream. Why wouldn't they? It allows them to give better benefits to whomever they're parceling them out to, or at least as good as. So they didn't have, on the evil investors' part, pension funds, mostly, they didn't have a whole lot of incentive to look to see what they were buying, did they? Hey, these things were guaranteed. They were insured. So let's see. Bank makes a loan. Doesn't matter if it's a good or a bad loan. They just make the loan, collect their fee for doing that, and move on. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac buys them, puts them all in one big mushy pot, and they don't care. Not their problem. They're going to sell them off. Mortgage, collateralized mortgage obligations, CMOs. Pension funds? What do we care? They're insured, for God's sake. What could go wrong here? And then the insurance companies. Oh, boy. Another perverse incentive. Yeah, here we go. The insurance companies look at this mushed-up pot, and they say, well, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac is telling us here's the quality rating on this thing, so we'll insure it for this much. Due diligence much here, folks? Yeah, not so much. I mean, did they look at them? Yeah, a little bit, kind of, sort of, maybe a little bit. But no, not a whole lot. And so they issued insurance. It says, you know what, doggone it, some of these things don't pay off right. We'll make it good. Don't worry about it. Everything is hunky-dory here. Okay. Now, insurance companies being insurance companies say, you know, maybe we need to lay off some of this risk. So they parcel it off around to other insurance companies and that kind of thing. And they making big premiums on these things. I mean big premiums. Well, they're big for me. I don't know about you guys, but, you know, anytime you're talking about seven-figure numbers and that kind of stuff, it kind of goes over my head. Anyway, so the insurance companies are saying, yeah, we know, everything's cool, you know, banks aren't going to make bad loans, and you guys are telling us this is good, so yeah, we're going to insure them. And that's all really fine because they're bringing in all these premiums until the shit hits the fan. Oh, yeah, by the way, during all of this, what happens? Home ownership goes up. Largest percentage of Americans own their own homes. Ain't that the American dream? Got this nice little cottage on this nice little paved street with this nice little white picket fence and this nice little green yard. I mean, isn't that what everybody wants? The American dream. Got my own home. By God, I'm the master of my castle. Except that some of those people didn't buy it for the right reasons. And by the way, Greg Howard, thank you very much for this thought. Some people bought them not for a long-term place to live, to raise up their families, grow up, and be a place that they could be in their retirement. Now, that used to be the norm. And that's no longer the norm. Some of these people bought these so that they could turn around in 5 years and flip them and make obscene amounts of money on them. And why would that be? Because more and more people were buying houses. And there was a shortage of houses. And there was a shortage of desirable locations. And so what happened? The price went up. Of course it went up. What else could it do? What most folks forget is that every market that goes up can come down. Every time. I don't care what the market is. From all the way from the Dutch tulip mania back in the 1600s or whenever it was, all the way up to our current crises of the home of homes. If the market goes up, it can go down. And if you do not plan for that, if you do not take that into account, then you're a fool. Plain and simple, you're a fool. Because it happens. And we are certainly seeing the results of that today. So, what do we have? We have a number of perverse incentives ranging all the way from banks through Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. And by the way, guess what? They are still doing this. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, not so much, but guess who? FHA, Federal Housing Authority. Direct federal involvement. Thank you very much. God, I love these people. And what are they doing? Yeah, you can buy a house for a 3% down payment. Thank you very much. Falling house prices, and I'm going to put 3% down, and when it goes underwater, I just walk away, right? Yeah, cheap rent. Okay, fine. I'll do that. God, talk about a perverse incentive. Okay. So the banks make the loan. They don't care if they're good or bad. They sell them to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, who doesn't really care if they're good or bad. They talk to the insurance companies who really don't know whether they're good or bad, but they insure them anyway. And then they sell the CMOs to the evil investors, who are mostly pension funds, who really can't afford to take this damn hit. Another perverse incentive. And what do we get? We get a falling marketplace. We get massive foreclosures. We get massive delinquencies, and it isn't over yet. I mean, that's just through one industry. That is an illustration of how perverse incentives work. So when we do that, why aren't we looking for not the perverse incentives, but the positive incentives? Why aren't we looking for, maybe policies that promote employment instead of subtract from it? Why don't we do that? I mean, is there some law of nature that says, you know, we can't do that, Bill? Oh, God, no. I mean, what in the world would happen if we did that? Well, I'll tell you what would happen. We'd actually get someplace. Consumer confidence is down. Today's report, down. Massive, unprecedented to use a favorite word of somebody I know, home foreclosures. Massive, unprecedented numbers of bankruptcies being filed. I mean, how long do you do this before you say, you know, this ain't working? And I don't care how many times I try it, it ain't gonna work. How long does it take to do that? You know, another thought struck me as I was kind of getting ready for the show, and that was this. When you're in a social situation, your own private life, and you're in a social situation, and somebody insults you, what's your first reaction? Mine is, generally, unless it's a really open, direct insult, mine is, maybe they're having a bad day. You know, okay, fine, maybe that's a bad subject for them. Let's just kind of pass that off and we'll go on about our business and here we go. But what happens if the next time you meet this person in a social situation, they insult you again? Well, once is a coincidence, two is a trend, and it's kind of like, I think to myself, what is it with this person? What is it that they have against me? I mean, what is it that I have done to them that they think they can simply come in and insult me? Now, I may not say anything directly to them, but that's kind of what I'm thinking in my head. But I will tell you this. If the next time and the next time and the next time that I'm at some kind of a social function with these people, and they insult me each and every time, I pretty rapidly then come to the conclusion, one, these people really don't like me. I don't know why, but they don't like me. And you know what? I'm really getting kind of tired of these insults, and I'm not really much sure that I like them a lot either. And if the insults are of the right type, I will in fact confront them. Now, that's on a personal level. What happens when your elected official does that to you? I mean, is there some kind of social compact I'm not aware of that says, oh no, Bill, it's okay, your elected representatives are allowed to insult you. And you ought not to say anything about that because that's just not done. Now, I'm not aware of the social compact, but it must be there because I see a whole lot of elected officials, whether that be at the local level, the state level, or the federal level, insulting their constituents. And I'm saying, well, so what happens? Well, one of the things that happens is tea parties form, who are really tired of being insulted, by the way. Thank you very much. You know, another thing that happens, people start getting up in their face and saying, wait a second, you work for me, not vice versa. I had an instance here in California about, I don't know, maybe a month ago. An NRA had sent out an alert because there were a couple of pieces of legislation that were in committee about having to do with firearms and ammunition availability and fingerprinting and all that kind of stuff. And they said, here are the people on the committee. Write, email, phone, all that kind of stuff, and tell them what it is that you'd like them to do. And so me, being fairly lazy, said, fine, I'll email them. So I did. Did you know that, one, I didn't get any responses back. None. Whatsoever. Actually, that's not true. I did get some responses back. I got no germane responses back. The responses back that I got from three elected officials were, if you don't live in my district, I'm not interested in talking to you. Now, they said it a little more politely, but that's the message. And I'm sitting here saying, wait a minute. You're making law that affects all of us in California, but you aren't interested in talking to anybody other than in your district? That doesn't make any sense to me at all. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me at a county level, let alone the state level. And I thought, how arrogant these people are. How absolutely arrogant they are. Because they know they get elected out of their district. And in California, that means it is probably Taylor gerrymandered for them. And so they can afford to say, I'm sorry, I don't talk to anybody outside of my district. And I don't accept communications from anybody outside my district. Bye-bye. Have a good day. And I'm saying that's got to change. Now in California, hopefully it will, we now have a Citizens Commission on Redistricting. We will see how that works. Its biggest claim to fame is it takes redistricting out of the politicians' hands. Its maybe not so great claim to fame is the people that are on that commission aren't answerable to anybody. So maybe we got to see who's in bed with who. However, the rules are pretty clear about what they have to consider. The districts have to be compact. They have to be contiguous. They cannot snake from one place to another. So we'll see how close they come to that. I'm hoping that it does some maybe good things. And we'll see what happens. And that's, that's kind of where I am. On a national level, back to my insulting thing, Barack Obama has insulted us. I mean, at every turn. He has insulted America at every turn. I get frustrated when I think about what he's done. I don't know why he's done it. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, well, I can read his mind and I know this, this, and this about all of that. I can infer things. I can say, you know what, it's really kind of consistent with a socialist, communist viewpoint. I am sure that all of his supporters and he himself would say, oh, no, I just want to take the greatest country in the world and change it, that's all. But he has insulted us. He insulted the Queen of England. He insulted veterans when he did not go to Normandy, when he did not lay a wreath at the new Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And yes, I know other presidents have done that, two of them. Gosh. They were busy laying wreaths elsewhere, but, you know, that's okay. It doesn't matter. Where did Barack go? Yeah, well, he decided he needed to go back to Chicago for whatever reason. I don't know. Pay off Blago. Who knows? The point of this is this. He insults us and expects us to like that. And he smiles while he does that. And he has wonderfully soothing words. Unless he's talking about Republicans, in which case we're dirty bastards. But, oh, well, that's okay, fine. I understand that politics ain't beanbag. But when he openly insults the Supreme Court in a venue where they cannot respond on the floor of a joint session of the House and Senate, he has gone too far. When he insults Representative Hoekstra on an open stage at a ribbon-cutting ceremony for a battery plant, and he openly insults him. He has gone too far. He insults us. And that just isn't right. It isn't presidential. Hell, it's not. It isn't high school presidential, let alone president of the United States, for God's sake. When does this guy quit campaigning? He has been president for what, 19 months? When does he act like it? When does he believe that, okay, by God, I spent enough OJT time, I'm going to be president now? When does he do that? And I don't know, because he sure doesn't show any signs that he's going to. He doesn't show any presidential qualities. He bows to foreign leaders. The President of the United States bows to no one. You nod your head, you stick out your hand to shake hands, you don't bow to anybody, ever, under any circumstances. That is shameful, and it insults us. When you lay a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier, you do that with grace and humility and thanks. You don't blow it off. That insults us. It insults me as a vet. It insults me as a citizen. When you insult your opposition, what have you done? You've simply invited that behavior back towards yourself. Is that smart? It isn't smart. I mean, right now on Twitter, you can find all kinds of calls for when we take back the majority in the House. And I suspect we probably will. That we're going to have, I mean, they aren't calling them this, but we're going to have witch hunts for his administration. And as much as it would do my heart good to see that, from a public policy standpoint, it is not the right thing to do. Investigate where you believe there to be wrongdoing, absolutely. But to investigate, simply to investigate, to drag people through the mud, is just wrong. And I don't care whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, a Libertarian, or a Martian. Doesn't matter. It's wrong. You don't do that. Not because somebody else did it to you first. Not because you think you got to prove a point. You don't do it because it does not well serve the rule of law. When the law becomes partisan, we've lost it. When the law is used for partisan purposes, we have lost it. Because it is no longer the rule of law, it's the rule of fiat. And that's just plain wrong. That is not right. And I will be happy to debate that point with anybody. You can't do that. As much as I would like to see him grub through the mud, preferably a pigsty mud, you can't do that. Do I respect him? Nope. Absolutely not. Do I respect the office? Yep. And as soon as somebody is in that office that I can respect, I will not only respect the office, but I will also respect the occupant. And not until then. I am reminded by Pammy that he returned the Churchill bust. He just, yesterday or today, insulted the Boy Scouts, didn't show up at their 100-year anniversary. You know, I mean, this is just, how long does this have to go on before people say, you know, this guy just doesn't like us. He just doesn't like us. He's much more comfortable liking other people who are not us. I saw on Twitter today that somebody, two things. One, somebody, at least in the Senate, but maybe the House, is looking to somehow change the rules about filibuster so that it only takes simple majorities to pass things. Incidentally, that's not confined to just the federal government. Here in California, we have a proposition on the ballot in November that says, you know what, notwithstanding Prop 13 and all that kind of stuff, we think we ought to be able to pass a budget by a simple majority. By the way, guess who's in the majority in our California houses? Yeah, that's right. It's the Democrats. In the Senate, same thing. Well, you know what? It's just too doggone hard with a 59-41 seat majority and a 70 seat majority in the House. It's just too doggone hard to pass legislation. By God, we think we ought to get rid of the filibuster. You know, and I listen to that and I shake my head and say, yeah, you're trying that, but you know what? You need to think about that. Because if that's true for you, it's true for other people too. And when you are out of power, and you will be out of power, then those same rules are going to apply. And you aren't going to like the results. And you're going to say, wait a minute, I want the filibuster back. And we're going to smile and say, too late, folks. You already changed that. It's done. Next time you're in power, you might want to consider changing it back yourself. The other issue that comes up, apparently one of the northeastern states has passed legislation, but I don't think the governor has signed it yet, that says, regarding the Electoral College, whoever gets the popular vote, electoral votes. Or maybe it was whoever has the popular vote nationwide gets our electoral votes. And what that really means is that they didn't study history much. The Electoral College was put in because there was a dispute between large states and small states. And the dispute centered around representation and how presidents got elected. And the small states won that victory. And what it says is that small states have, in the Electoral College, they have the electoral votes equal to both their senators and their representative. I think that's how it works. But their state is a winner-take-all state, and their electoral college votes must go for whoever that state selected. So that led to, in later elections, that led to people pursuing electoral college strategies. You look at the states that you know you're going to win, and you add up all those electoral college votes. And then you look at the ones that are leaning your way, and you say, okay, there's some more electoral college votes. And you do that till you get to the required number of electoral college votes. And that's a strategy that you can pursue. Not without its dangers, but you can pursue that. So, that got some play when people were doing that said, Democrats did that first, and then Republicans kind of returned the favor with their Southern strategy. And then it started to become a contest of, okay, let's find the biggest electoral college vote states, and we'll pick those off, and then we'll see what others are left and available. If a state says, my electoral college votes are going to go to whoever nationally wins the most votes, what they have just done is disenfranchised their voters. Now, if I'm a voter in that state, I am not going to be real happy about that, if I know about it and if I understand it. And those are the two key things. I don't know that the populace of those states are paying attention to the issue, one, and two, that they understand it if they did. So, if you know of a state that's doing that, has done that, or is contemplating that, you need to be educating people. You need to be telling them, hey, looky here and look at what that does to you. And if you don't like that, then you have to say something. You got to jump up and down. You have to jump up and down even if you have representatives that say, I'm sorry, you don't live in my district, and I'm not going to listen to you. You still have to be in their face. So if they hold town hall meetings, go to them. You know, and yeah, I know, that's easy for me to say. I live out here in the boondocks in little old Hayfork, California, 65 miles away from the largest city, which is about 80,000 people. And that's really easy for me to say. But you know what? I've got a really good representative, Wally Herger. I can get him on the phone. Him, himself, personally. I can get him on the phone. And I'm not a big fish. I'm not a guy who donates. In fact, I don't think I've ever donated to Wally. He doesn't need to in his district. It's kind of pretty much his until he decides he wants to retire. But I can call, and I can talk to him. His staff knows me by name because I call often enough. And generally they can tell me what he's thinking and where he's going and that kind of stuff. My point is this. You have to be on that kind of basis, one, with your friendly representatives. And two, if you aren't on that kind of a basis with your friendly representatives, you need to get to work and get that way. Second point is this. If your representative is not friendly, then that means you've got to be in his face until at least he knows your name. And he can tell you what you're going to tell him because he knows what he's going to hear. Because that means you're getting your message across. Now, he may not act on it. But your message is getting there, and that's all you can do. Now, you got one more thing you can do. You can vote them out when the time comes. Folks, I'm running out of time here. Thank you so much for putting up with me for tonight. I appreciate that. This really started out as a not-so-much radio show. I didn't really have a whole lot of things, and the things that I did have we never even talked about, so it's kind of like, okay, very good. I'd like to shout out to Just Me Pammy, Louise Amaw, Arkansas Traveler, Cat 101-2000, if you're listening, thank you very much for tuning in. I certainly do appreciate that. Hippie Chick, all of you folks that are listening, thank you so much. I do appreciate it. I know that Tracy appreciates it when she's here. I am certainly hoping that she's going to be back next week. And if she is, then, you know, well, you know what? Tune in anyway, doggone it. I don't do so bad here. Anyway, I'm hoping Tracy's going to be back. She always has interesting points. She always brings them up in an interesting manner. And I appreciate that. Sometimes we disagree. Sometimes we don't. When we disagree, I pretty much tell you about it, and you can draw your own conclusions. So, yeah, I know I got a little bit more time left, but I'm out of stuff and words to say, so thank you very much for listening, and hopefully we'll catch you next week. Thank you very much. Bye now.